Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Midnight Realm by Sawyer Bennett. Narrated by Aidan Snow and Lucy Rivers. Chapter 1. Amel. You would think being king of the underworld would be a job full of nothing but perks, as the title would imply. But there are downsides. The biggest one right now is having to put up with this arsehole. Maddox, the demigod, was sent to Veronis by the god of life and death, Zora, to collect me to answer for my crimes. It's not that I mind facing the consequences. I knew they would be steep when I made the decision to intervene in a battle that I'd specifically been told to avoid. But fuck it. I'd do it all over again. Maddox and I pass through the veil that separates Veronis from the first dimension of Earth, emerging onto a path carved along the Jungfrau. It overlooks the vibrant green valley of Lauterbrunnen, the craggy snow-covered peaks of the Bernese Alps in the distance. Zora chose to settle here when she journeyed from a mortal life to death, and from death to the god of life. Her powers are infinite, and she could live anywhere she wanted, including in mystical realms that can't be accessed by anyone but the gods. Instead, she chose a modest Swiss chalet with a killer view and her two Bernese mountain dogs, Eurosen and Mattia. Zora chose a life of solitude, which isn't surprising. She spent the first 28 years as a mortal trapped in the underworld, isolated from family and love, made to endure painful magical infusions to store energy until such time it could be funneled into Chimeris, the then ruling queen of the underworld. An overly long and involved story that eventually led to Chimeris's death and my ascension to the throne. But suffice it to say, Zora's an introvert by circumstance and inadvertent design, and thus chooses to live in far-off places. Maddox moves to the front door and it grates, the familiarity with which he walks right on in without knocking. He's known her barely a year, whereas I'm all she's ever known. It's true I'd be welcome here any time I wanted to visit, but I don't. My time with Zora ended the minute her sister Fenley rescued her from the underworld, and she no longer needed me for protection. Or maybe it never truly started, seeing as how I was one of the dark fae tasked with holding her prisoner. I was also responsible for forcing her to submit to the brutal infusions of magic by the light fae Prince Pike. It was my duty to Chimeris that had me hurting the frail human I'd come to love and desire. A pathetic excuse, really. Zora never could have loved a monster like me, but my blackened heart beat for her. That was then, though. This as now. Tucking my black wings in tight, I bend slightly to get them under the human-size entryway, closing the door behind me. Eurosen's and Mattia's booming barks echo through the chalet due to the open layout, high ceilings and distinct lack of furniture. They run straight for Maddox, not to rip out his throat as an intruder, but to bound joyfully around him, vying for his attention and scratches. My teeth grit as he bends over to rub them, twisting his head to shoot me a shit-eating grin. A crisp breeze that smells of mountain snow washes over me, and I turn to see Zora walking in from the deck that overlooks the valley. As a god, she can look and dress any way she likes, but she's wearing jeans, knee-high boots with shearling trim, and a fuzzy-looking sweater in a deep hunter green. Her snow-white hair is piled on top of her head in a messy bun, and her blue-green-gold eyes look upon me with displeasure. Maddox calls the dogs to his heel and walks out the front door with them. He doesn't do it out of consideration for me, but rather out of deference to Zora. A god meeting out punishment isn't a public affair, and Zora would never stand for someone to watch.
"You knew better," she chides as she crosses the polished wood floors.
You were forbidden to interfere in the Battle of Vorones, and you've managed to really piss Cersei off. Cersei is the god of fate, and can be prickly. But I can't help but point out, she might manipulate the fates, but I also know she embraces free will. Zora glares at me. Onyx wants your head on a platter. The god of war. She's not prickly, but downright ruthless. She's the one I really need to worry about offending, because supernatural beings like demigods and the king of the underworld are not allowed to help sway the tide of mortal battles, unless Onyx wants it done. She's my daughter, Zora, I say, clasping my hands in front of me. There was no way I was going to leave Talia's life up to the fates, and I didn't do much other than destroy a few demons to give the mortals a fighting chance. It's been a weird few weeks. My daughter Talia, who I had never met, was battling an evil sorceress and heard the mention of Vorones. I watched from afar, but when she called out to me for help, there was never a choice to ignore it. "You disobeyed your gods," she says, and while her voice never rises in volume, the floor shakes with her power. Most immortals would quake because Zora could kill with a snap of her fingers. But I've been in existence for millennia, and I don't scare that easily. "What is to be my punishment?" I ask, needing for her to get on with it. I don't require the lecture I'm sure she's itching to give. It's not that she's truly mad at me, but more concerned. If I had disobeyed only Zora, I'd likely get a slap on the wrist. But I thumbed my nose at her brethren gods, and they're probably calling for my death. Zora sighs and shakes her head. "I've managed to get the council to agree on banishment to the underworld. You cannot pass through the veil anymore." "For how long?" I inquire. "The freedom to come and go between realms is a luxury, but I can do without for a while." "For eternity," Zora lifts her chin, her expression hard and unyielding. "Eternity," I exclaim in horror. "But Talia, I want to visit her. She'll have children one day." I try to rein in my temper, but it's not working. "I'll have grandchildren one day. You can't keep me from them."
"I can keep you in the underworld," she retorts hotly, lightning crackling within the depths of her eyes and her hands curling into fists.
I brace for her to strike, but instead she takes in a calming breath and lets it out.
"Amel, Onyx wanted your powers stripped and you tossed from your throne. This was a good compromise."
"Take my powers," I growl, throwing my arms wide. "Take your fucking throne. Don't keep me from my child." Zora's expression softens and she reaches out to touch my chest. There was a brief time when we were lovers, and her mere touch could get me to grant her almost any wish. Now, I only feel a frustrated kinship for all we shared.
"I'm truly sorry, Amel. The decision is made."
It's no balm, her apology. God's apologizing for nothing, yet I hear the regret in her tone. It means shit to me right now as my temper flares. I step away from her and pivot on my foot, leaving her presence without a by or leave. If she wants to strike me down for my insolence, so be it. I stride out of her house, deciding to walk down the mountain before creating a door through the veil to go back to the underworld. Once I step through, I'll be stuck there, so I'm going to take time to enjoy the beauty of Switzerland. A low whistle sounds, and I turn to see Maddox casually leaning against a tree. The dogs are off in the distance, running down a grassy hill.
"Boy, that's harsh." "Of course," the asshole eavesdropped.
I ignore him and head along the path, but he falls into step beside me.
"I need you to do something."
The request is so shocking I stop and glare at him. Maddox takes two more steps before realizing he left me behind and turns back.
"A favor," he clarifies. Why would I ever grant you a favor? I ask. We've hated each other from the moment Zorda became a possession both of us coveted. He shrugs. Never hurts to ask? I just stare at him, waiting to hear what he thinks I might be able to do for him. I want you to reincarnate Lucian, he says. His demigod brother. I laugh, shaking my head. I'll pass. Pushing around him on the trail, I walk again. He blurs, whizzing past and stopping before me. Why not? Because you're a prick. Maddox cocks an eyebrow. You don't have the power to do it, he surmises. But he can't hide the hope in his eyes. Don't I? If you possess such power, then use it. It won't cost you anything. Again, that's a hard pass. I start walking again, but his next words freeze me in place. You're jealous, he drawls, and I glance back at him. You can't stand the fact that I'm the one in Zora's bed now. I'd given up the dream of being with Zora a long time ago, but I'm not going to waste this opportunity to needle the demigod. Maybe you're the one who's jealous, I lob at him. Because I had her first. I took her virginity, you know. And she begged me to do it. All true. Not a lie within that taunt, and it strikes its mark true and bold. Maddox snarls and flies at me. I brace, locking my arms around him, and we tumble down the mountain path. We roll and bounce, throwing punches along the way. I'm able to bound up from the ground when I reach a plateau a few seconds before him and aim a well-placed kick under his jaw. Maddox's head snaps back, but it doesn't stop him from charging like a bull. Lowering his shoulder, he catches me just under the ribs and drives me into a tree which is pulverized by our velocity. I push him off, wings flaring, and launch myself at him. He meets me with full force, and the impact of our bodies colliding makes the mountain shudder. Enough! Zora bellows, using tendrils of lightning from her hands to wrap around our bodies and fling us apart. Maddox slams into a large boulder from which chunks of rock explode, and I turn another tree into toothpicks. While he capitulates by holding his hands up in surrender, I lunge forward, only to have Zora's lightning lasso throw me back on my ass. I said enough, she growls, but it's not sufficient to dissuade me. I'm poised to attack as soon as she lets me out of these magical shackles. Instead, she says, be gone, Amel. Before I can protest, I'm back in the underworld, still sitting on my ass at the base of my throne, on the Bridge of Judgment, the Crimson River churning 200 feet below. Your Highness! Kallax rushes over, reaching a hand out to help me up. I swat it away in irritation as I jump to my feet. Kallax backs up and bends in a low bow, bobbing repetitively until I acknowledge him. Stop doing that, I growl.
Of course, your elaborate marvelousness.
Kallax straightens and looks at me with hopeful eyes. He's a short man, no more than 5'4", with curly blonde hair, a broad nose, and thin lips. He's a weasel of an assistant, inherited from the former queen and mine to use as long as I want to keep him around. He was a weasel of a man back in the First Dimension, a minor lackey under a corrupt Roman senator in the year 748 B.C. While the senator he worked for received a one-way ticket to the Crimson River upon his death, Kallax was kept by Queen Chimeris to serve her needs. Stop calling me those stupid names. Kallax bobs his head.
Of course, you're...
I hold up a hand to stop him. Old habits die hard. Chimeris loved the lavish praise and idiotic names he bestowed upon her, but getting him to just call me a Mel has been trying my patience. I've got a job for you. I ponder exactly how I want to do this. I'll need to take your body for a bit.
But...
I touch Kallax on the wrist and his body disappears. He's not gone, though. His soul remains. A writhing ball of blackened smoke tendrils hovering before me. Kallax can hear me, but without the mechanics of a voice box that comes with a body, he can't speak.
I kind of like him this way. I want you to find the demigod Maddox. The smoke rolls over on itself, expands and pulses. I take it to be excitement to serve. Make his life hell for a few days. The smoke contracts, coalescing and darkening, needing clarification. Do poltergeist shit, I mutter with a wave of my hand. Knock stuff over, turn his lights on and off, whatever. While Kallax doesn't have a physical body, he is a ball of supernatural energy, an unencumbered soul with free rein to cause havoc if I so grant it. I instruct Kallax where to go. Maddox is living in Southern California near his other demigod brother, Carrick, and his wife, Fenley, who happens to be Zorda's twin, but a redhead. It's a tangled web. Ripping a hole in the veil with nothing more than a magical thought, such are the powers Zorda bestowed when she sat me on the throne, I usher Kallax through. I'll snatch him back after a few days of driving Maddox crazy, thus ensuring me the last, if not pettiest, laugh. I don't dare step through the hole back into the first dimension. Zora's sentence is absolute, and I have no intention of disobeying it. While I know Zora would protect me as best she could, I don't trust Cersei or Onyx not to come after me. I don't trust them not to go after Talia, either. So I'll stay put. For now.
Chapter 2. Nyssa.
Nyssa, I need 2 vodka tonics.
Maria yells across the bar to me. Someone has the jukebox cranked. I nod at her, commit the request to memory, and continue building the 2 drink orders put in prior to hers. The Crazy Eights is hopping tonight, and I don't mind the bustle. It means better tips, especially since I pour my drinks strong.
Do you need a break?
Glancing over my shoulder, I find Sam looking at me with worry. He's a sweet man, the owner of this bar. But I don't like anyone trying to take care of me. I have a distinct aversion to it, actually.
I'm good.
My tone is curt, and I'm not even sorry. It's best to keep him at arm's length, even though I can tell he's the type of good-hearted guy who routinely takes in strays. I don't want him getting attached to me in any way, because I won't stay here long. It's impossible for me to settle down. This is my 8th night in a row I've worked, and in those 8 days, I've picked up partial day shifts too. I've been here 2 weeks, and the small apartment Sam rented me above the bar suits my needs. I figure I'll stick around a few months before moving on. Not to find greener pastures, because those don't exist. Really, I'm just trying to outrun my demons. About the time I start feeling secure, it'll seem like the walls are closing in and I'll jet. I mix drink after drink, pull pints, and force myself to act interested in those sitting at the bar hitting on me. I've become good at pretending, and my tip jar is filled with green, mostly 5s and 10s, which is pretty good for a dive bar like this. A man takes the bar stool right in front of where I'm pulling cold bottled beer out of the cooler.
Be right with you,
I say, without glancing up. I efficiently twist off the caps, tossing them to the floor where they'll be swept up later tonight, and hand the bottles off to a couple of few seats down. I mark it on their tab and turn to the new customer.
What can I get you?
When my eyes make contact with the man, my entire body locks in recognition. Same dirty blonde hair, except it's thinning on top, and watery blue eyes that make him look perpetually sad. It's been 9 years. He's gained a little weight, but is otherwise utterly recognizable.
I'll take a screwdriver,
he says, before his gaze moves from me to check out the other patrons in the bar. I'm stunned into inaction. While I would know Vince Matheson anywhere, he doesn't recognize me at all. And I don't know whether I should be offended. Granted, I've changed a lot in 9 years. My dark brown hair has been bleached platinum and cut short in shaggy layers. It's an awful hairdo, and I did it myself with a cheap drugstore kit and a straight razor. I've lost weight since he last saw me, and while it's noticeable in my body, my face has thinned out the most. No, I shouldn't be offended he doesn't recognize me. Not sure anyone would, from 9 years ago. His gaze comes back to me, and I managed to offer up a polite smile before turning to mix his cocktail. With my back to him, I feel his eyes on me, and I verify it with a quick glance in the mirror behind the bar. I'm wearing a mashup of clothes I got from Goodwill, a denim skirt cut super short and frayed, a tank top that's tight and a little too small for my breasts, and a mesh overlay shirt that really doesn't conceal the fact I'm not wearing a bra. It's a provocative outfit, designed to up my tips. Vince's eyes drop to my ass, and it does surprise me just a little. The way I look now wouldn't have appealed to him back then. But maybe he's changed. Turning, I set the drink on a napkin, and he slides a credit card toward me.
Open a tab, if you don't mind.
His voice is what I remember. Timid, butterfly soft. Got it. I put his credit card in a leather jacket awaiting his final tally and move down the bar to handle some refills. When I glance back at him from time to time, he's not watching me anymore. He focuses on his drink and his smartphone, closed off and not inviting conversation. After about 10 minutes, I can't help myself, and I move back to him. His drink is only about half empty, but still I ask, "You want another?" His head lifts, and he blinks at me in surprise.
Yeah. Why not?
I mix his second drink even stronger than the first and set it down before him.
Thanks, he says.
My pleasure. I lean on the bar, folding my arms, and I know it plumps my breasts. His eyes can't help but flick there. You from around here? He shakes his head, hand curling around the first screwdriver.
Traveling through? Look like a nice bar to have a few drinks.
I flash him a flirty smile. This place is a dump, but I make excellent cocktails. Vince smiles back, taking the bait.
Too bad you're working, or I'd buy you one. Of course, it probably wouldn't be as good as yours.
Too bad indeed. I purr, reaching out to stroke a fingertip down the back of his hand. Vince flushes as I draw away. I shoot him a wink and turn toward the rear bar, noticing now that his attention is fully on my ass, where I want it to stay. I've got him hooked. It doesn't take long. A few hours and 4 screwdrivers with double shots of vodka, and Vince is drunk. I've managed to flirt with him for the last hour and a half, lacing dirty talk and innuendo within our conversation, and ensuring that his butt would stay glued to the bar stool. He practically drools as he watches me. I smile as I walk by, approaching Sam down at the other end of the bar. I tap him on the shoulder. Do you mind if I take a 15-minute break?
Of course not,
Sam exclaims, sounding relieved I've asked for a bit of time from behind the bar. I know he doesn't want to lose one of the best bartenders he's had in a while. He's a sweet man, and I wish I could care more about him. But I don't. Thanks. I head back down the bar toward Vince. He smiles as I get nearer, but I can see he has to squint a little to stop the blurred, drunken vision. I don't waste any time. Leaning over the bar toward him, I say, I've got 15 minutes and an apartment upstairs. Care to join me? Apparently Vince isn't that drunk, because he asks,
Is it going to cost me anything?
I wag a finger playfully. I'm not that kind of woman, I tease, although I used to be. On occasion, I've had to spread my legs for money, but now I make it slinging drinks. Only going to cost you a little bit of time.
Then let's go,
he says, lurching up off the bar stool. I meet him at the end of the bar and take his hand. Winding my way through the crowd, we head to the back hallway, past the restrooms to a staircase that leads up. The boards groan under our weight as we ascend and leave the loud music and chatter of people behind. At my apartment, I let go of Vince's hand to pull out my key. He steps into my backside, his hands going to my waist. His breath is hot on my neck as he slurs,
You're going to be a good girl for Daddy.
I push the door open and step through, turning to face him as he stumbles in. My hand goes between his legs, and I find him soft. Typical. I don't know. I work at his belt, giving him a playful look, and I lick my lower lip to hold his attention. Have you been a good daddy?
The best,
he assures me. You going to let me tie you up and have my way with you?
Oh, God, he mutters with a groan. Please say that's not a joke.
It's not. I grab his hand and lead him to my small bedroom that contains nothing but a rickety iron bed and one night table. All my possessions hang in the closet or are still secure in my suitcase. Get naked. While Vince stumbles around shedding his clothes, I pull out some fishnet stockings I sometimes wear with short skirts. When I turn back to face Vince, I find him standing there naked, swaying. His dick is still limp, which is fine by me. Get on the bed, Daddy. He complies, a lecherous grin on his face. When he's on his back and in the center, I crawl over him in a straddle, my skirt rising indecently. Vince's hands come to my hips to try to push it up more, but I knock them away. No, 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 I chide. Wrists together and above your head.
Whatever you say, darling.
I work efficiently, wrapping the fishnets above his wrists and tying them to the iron bars. The bed is so old and wobbly, he could probably wrench one of the bars loose if he tried, but that's not going to be an issue. Settling down on his soft stomach, I press my hands to his chest and dig my fingernails in just a touch. He moans from the bite of pain. You don't recognize me, do you? I ask, even though I know the answer. There's no way he'd ever let me tie him up if he did. He squints at me, the alcohol muddying his brain.
I know you?
Yes.
From where?
I can barely get the words out. 7493 Melody Lane. The jolt of shock that courses through his body is palpable, and his vision clears. Lifting his head off the pillow, he peers at me hard, trying to see through the platinum hair and hollowed-out face. Vince is still not quite able to make the connection because I'm not the only girl who lived at that address, so I supply my name for him. Nissa. It takes a moment for him to search his memory, but then his eyes widen when he matches the name with my new face. I can read every emotion flickering across his face. Unease. Lust. Fear. Hope. He opens his mouth to say what, I have no clue. He snaps it closed just as quick when I pull the switchblade out of my back pocket. Pressing the tiny silver button, the blade ejects with a soft snick, and Vince's eyes bug out of his head.
Nissa, what the hell?
I put the knife tip to his pudgy throat and glare at him. What the hell? That's all you have to say to me?
What should I say?
He retorts and tries to buck me off. It causes the blade to nick him, and I grin as a rivulet of blood runs down his pale skin. I'd be careful, Vince. Wouldn't want me to slip now, would you? He eyes me warily, body going still. I consider my options carefully. Never in a million years did I think our paths would cross again. Lifting the blade from his neck, I hold it up before me and run my finger along the edge. It slices my skin, attesting to its sharpness.
What do you want from me?
Vince rasps. My eyes travel slowly from the blade to his face, and I open up to let my emotions swell. I've been holding them back all night, and rage and fury now sweep through me. It burns like acid. I want you to die, Vince, I say quietly. He opens his mouth in protest, but his words are cut off as I lash out with the blade. It slices through his skin as if it were as frail as cotton candy, and I only know I hit the carotid by the spray of blood that hits me in the face. I gasp and sputter as I spit it out of my mouth. I can feel it dripping down my forehead and cheeks as I watch Vince's eyes bulge from their sockets. He gurgles,
and then chokes on his blood, and I watch, transfixed, for what seems like hours. It's such a good...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?